My guest at this time is Danny Danon. He is the deputy speaker of the Israeli Knesset, which is their parliament. He is a obviously high-ranking member of the Likud party in the nation of Israel. He's also the author of the brand new book, Israel, The Will to Prevail, which focuses a lot on the Palestinian question and, of course, many other issues in the Middle East factor into that as well, including the nuclear standoff with Iran, instability in Syria, and even the United States' relationship with Israel. Sir, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Greg. It's my pleasure to be on your show.
Let's start with the issue of Iran, because that was in the news not too long ago with the date of September 25th thrown out there as when the Israeli government was hoping for a consensus from the United States as to when they would be ready for perhaps a military strike. What was the significance of that date?
Well, we are not sitting with a calendar calculating the date, but the window of opportunity is closing down on us. We're looking very carefully at what's happening today in Iran, and they are building the bomb. While we are talking, debating, having another conference, another convention in Washington, the Iranians are building the nuclear bomb, and they're saying it very clearly. We want to wipe out the Jewish land, and then we will go and wipe out the great Satan, the U.S. So we cannot sit still and wait, and we hope to see some concrete action coming from the White House. Unfortunately, I do not see it coming, and I think it will be in our hands, you know, to take care of this threat.
What's your best intelligence tell you about the timetable here? You've talked about how they're getting closer, but how confident are you that you have a good idea of where they are in this process?
Well, I cannot get into specific details, Greg, but we are not talking about days, but not about a year. We are talking about months until we will get to the point where it will be impossible to bomb the reactors the minute they become activated and they will be hidden in the ground. So I think we have a few weeks, months to do something. And unfortunately, we hear a lot of speeches. We see a lot of condemnation in the UN. But when you look at the real action, the crippling sanctions are not actually working. So we don't see real leadership that is willing to face the threat. And that is, it brings us to the position where we have to think about what we do. Either we wait and we allow Iran to become nuclear, or we change the reality. And the Jewish nation has a history of changing realities, like we did in the 48, in 67. And so we need another miracle, and we need to change the reality.
Well, we're talking with Danny Danon. The book is Israel, The Will to Prevail. Last question on Iran. Do you believe that the U.S. elections will be a factor in the timing of the Israeli government here? It's pretty clear that the Obama administration would rather hold this off, if possible, until after the election in 70-some days. But do you believe that that will factor into whether or not Israel decides to act?
We have a lot of respect to the democratic process in the U.S. That's one of the things that keeps us such a close allies. Our values, Judeo-Christian heritage, the democracy. But when we're dealing with Iran, nobody cares in Iran about who will be elected in November 6th or what will be the outcome in the elections. So we cannot take it into account. And frankly speaking, I don't know if it will serve anyone who is running. So I think what we have to look is when is the date that we cannot wait any longer, because the minute Iran becomes nuclear, which it's a new ballgame. It's a new ballgame in the Middle East, and it's a threat not only to Jews in Israel. It's a threat for the people in the U.S. as well. You look at the close tie today between Iran and Venezuela, and you understand that everybody that hates the U.S. wants Iran to become nuclear. That is why we cannot allow it.
The relationship between President Obama and President Netanyahu isn't the strongest. You mentioned a little bit earlier in our conversation that you're waiting for kind of a definitive statement or a definitive action on the part of the U.S. administration that you no longer expect to come. What would be a definitive action or statement?
Greg, in my book, Israel, The Will to Prevail, I examine the relationship very closely between President Obama and our Prime Minister Netanyahu. And I can tell you very frankly that President Obama was not a good friend of Israel. The actions that he took against Israel by adapting all the demands of the Arab nations, of the Palestinians, we saw he is not a good friend of Israel. And I think also now, when we see what's happening, we understand that we can rely only on ourselves. And on that matter, I think Prime Minister Netanyahu knows that, and the people in Israel are backing him on that issue.
Let's talk about the Palestinian question now, which is, of course, hovering over all these different aspects. A decade or so ago, you probably wouldn't see both parties calling for a two-state solution. Now it's almost a knee-jerk statement from both Democrats and Republicans. You say that that is not the right way to go. Explain why.
I present a new paradigm. Enough with the talking. Let's face reality. We have no partner today, and we should not surrender our homeland for imaginary peace. So I present a new aspect of thinking about a three-state solution, which is Israel, Jordan, and Egypt, period. I don't believe that a Palestinian state is viable, and I think it will be a threat to Israel. If I would tell you today that in Canada there will be a state of Hamas or a state of Al-Qaeda, you would say, no way, I don't want it in my backyard. That's what I'm saying here today. We see the linkage of the people in Gaza today to the Hamas, to Hezbollah, to Iran, and we don't want to see such an entity in our backyard. So I present a new aspect. Let's speak about it in the long run. We don't want to see a Palestinian state. We need to find an agreement with Jordan and Egypt and to find a reasonable agreement that will involve the Palestinian people, but without building a state of terror in our backyard.
What kind of three-state solution? Would this be about movement and access? So what needs to be addressed in a three-state solution? And do you think Egypt at this point would be a good faith partner?
Well, first of all, you look at the Middle East and you see that everything is so dynamic. If I would have told you 2 years ago that President Mubarak will be in jail or President Assad will be shooting his own people, nobody would have believed me. So I think we should present this aspect and push for it. And eventually, I think we will be able to negotiate with Egypt and Jordan. I'm not talking about transferring anyone. I'm talking about applying Israeli sovereignty over the Jewish community in Judea and Samaria, in our homeland in Judea and Samaria, and the vacant land in Judea and Samaria should be also part of Israel. And the main cities where you have the heavy population of the Palestinians, they should be linked into Jordan and Egypt, and that's something we will have to do via negotiations with Egypt and Jordan. It's not going to happen tomorrow, I know. I'm not telling you an easy, instant solution like some people are trying to do. I say it will be a long process. We will manage the conflict until we will be able to resolve the conflict. But we are facing reality. And hearing President Obama coming to Cairo, speaking about an imaginary peace process, I ask myself, he's not connected to reality. He doesn't know what's happening here in the Middle East. It takes more than a nice speech to change the realities here.
Danny Danone is the Deputy Speaker of the Israeli Knesset. His book is Israel, The Will to Prevail. And there's an interesting part in your book, sir, where you're talking about the proposal of a shared Jerusalem. Obviously, both sides want to make that their capital. And you make the interesting point that in cities where the Palestinians have substantial control, it's not the same as when the Israelis have that type of authority. And you give the example of Bethlehem, which is obviously a pilgrimage site for many Christians who visit the area and some who live there. And it's just a very different type of atmosphere and a less safe and comfortable atmosphere. What do you think would be the reality inside Jerusalem if some sort of shared status were to be achieved?
Greg, it's very simple. When we talk about freedom of religion, we really mean that there will be freedom for all religions, Muslims, Christians, and Jews. But apparently, when the Muslims, radicals, speak about freedom of religion, they're talking about freedom only to Muslims. Look at what's happening today in the tomb of Joseph, where Jews cannot go and pray there safely, even though it was written in the Oslo Accord. See what's happening in Bethlehem. Christians are fleeing Lebanon today because they are afraid to live there. So we know that if, God forbid, somebody will compromise the old city of Jerusalem, it will be impossible for Jews and Christians to practice their religion. For us, it's obvious that we can go and tour the old city and pray in the old city, but it is not a given. And we don't want to get any permission, not from the UN or the EU, that they will give us our permission to go and pray. We have been there in the past. We will never go back to those days.
Well, I want to get your reaction to one comment, and then not on an American political level, but it created a controversy while Mitt Romney was in Israel, where he talked about the economic opportunity in Israel and in the Palestinian territories. He says it's very different. There's much more prosperity in Israel because of very different cultures, and that created a criticism that he was considering one superior to the other or what have you. What did you make of his comments?
First of all, if you look at the numbers, Governor Romney was right. He's right. The GOP, the GNP, you look at all the numbers, you know, the people in Israel are making more profit. The economy is much stronger, and I want to see our neighbors becoming stronger economically. Unfortunately, what we see is that they are choosing the path of hatred, of incitement, instead of teaching their children technology, computers, math. They're teaching them hatred, incitement against Jews and Christians. So until they will not decide to invest in the people and in the future of their own people, it will be the same situation, and we will continue to become a startup nation to develop technology. And when you look at the innovation strategy in Israel and the innovation startup technology, it is amazing. I wish that one day we would see it also among our neighbors.
Last question before we let you go, sir. I think it's an assumption by a lot of people that a lot of anti-Semitism is essentially housed in the Middle East. But you point out in the book that it's happening a lot in American academia, in American policy, with our diplomats and so forth, and even radicalism in terms of flat-out terrorist groups finding a safe haven in Latin America. How much more do you think the American people perhaps need to be paying attention to this?
Greg, when you read my book, you're actually getting to the mind of the Israelis today and to the leadership about what we think before we take the decision that we have to take. And it's a hard call. It's tough decisions. And we know that we have good friends in the American people, in the American public that love us, pray for us. But also there are a lot of enemies which see Israel as the front line of Western values. And they are fighting against us. And we see it, the anti-Semitic attacks in Bulgaria, and in South America, and even in the U.S. That is why we have to work very closely with our allies, with our friends, but also we need to be ready to take action that is necessary to defend our people like we did in the past. And we need the will. We need the will, believe that we can prevail. And if we have the will, we will prevail.
One final question. I promise this will be the last one. You mentioned before, and this goes back to Iran, right where we started, the situation of eventually you got to get to the point where you either try to stop Iran from getting the nuclear weapon or be willing to live with them in possession of it. Is Israel willing to live with Iran in possession of a nuclear weapon?
We cannot allow to even consider this as an option, because when that day will come, the balance of power in the Middle East will change, and you will see Iran starting to threaten to blackmail not only Israel, even the Arab states are scared about this option. So they don't say it publicly, but we say it publicly. We cannot allow Iran become nuclear. History has taught us when you have a mad leader who is threatening to kill the Jewish people, and you cannot allow him to become capable of doing so.
Sir, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you very much for your time today. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you very much, Greg.
Israel, The Will to Prevail is the book. The author is Danny Danone. He's the deputy speaker of the Israeli Knesset, rising star in the Likud party, which is also, of course, the party of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WND.com.